baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Go. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside the beautiful Mandalay Bay Racing Sportsbook, you are listening to another edition of the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. And I'm your host, Gorgeous George. With me, as always, is the devious and dastardly Goes, RA's co-host. Goes, a Sunday edition. You ready to tackle this?
I like it. Fresh off of football. Good UFC card. Others, we'll call them. Most boxing and Combate Americas.
Oh, I got you. Yeah. Okay, I was like,
the other guys.
About? Yeah, no, you're right. And by the way, when you say football, there's football and football. I mean, what a tense weekend, man.
Especially for you.
Yeah, exactly.
I had to watch my Redskins while you watched your 49ers. And I was explaining to Laura, right now I feel like I'm watching a pro team on one TV and like a high school football team on the other. I couldn't believe the difference in gameplay.
All right. Folks, it's a lot to cover here. We got UFC on ESPN, Overeem versus Rosenstruck, the card that was in Washington, D.C. on Saturday. Like Go say, we will dip into some Combate Americas, a tiny bit of boxing, some results. But there's just a lot to cover on today's show. Not, don't forget all these. There's other stuff, too. Go split lips, nut shots, twisters. Buckle up, folks. It's the MMA Junkie Radio Show on a Sunday night, ready to drop Monday morning.
Are you a football fan? Then you don't want to miss NFL 100, a USA Today sports celebration of the NFL's 100th season.
From the best on-field performances to the draft's biggest busts, we're picking the top 100 players, moments, and teams since 1919. See if your favorites stack up to ours at usatoday.com/NFL100. Alrighty, so we'll lead off with the big news. Obviously, we're an MMA show. We're going to stick to the MMA stuff. Wow. Jairzinho Rosenstruck defeated Alistair Overeem in the main event of the Washington, D.C. show via KO punch. Goes with 4 seconds left in round five. The first four rounds were basically boring. I mean, I thought somebody was going to get laid out, but way sooner than it wound up taking place. Were we rewarded at the very end? Yeah, I suppose a little bit, but, ooh, man, the boot birds were out, and Rosenstruck was on his way to an L. Overeem was on his way to a W, and then, bam, two big punches, and Overeem's night.
What a weird fight, because Rosenstruck was on his way to the loss, but he had a lot of moments where you felt like he could have done a little bit more.
Right, yeah.
Like, it looked like times where
he
he almost intimidated Alistair Overeem at moments, and it seemed like Overeem would just cover up. And just covering up as a heavyweight is almost impossible to do because guys hit so hard that even if you're blocking a shot, it's so much power behind it, it's still going to kind of daze you. And he was giving Rosenstruck those opportunities, like, moment after moment. So it kind of like kept you on the edge of your seat thinking something can happen. But I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, you get the knockout. But I don't know if there's much you can say about Rosenstruck. Because, yeah, I mean, he put a stamp on it. But the fight itself wasn't that great.
Yeah, I agree. Rosenstruck was basically like deer in the headlights at times. Like all that aggression he's had in other fights, it just didn't really come to fruition here.
Hey, to I think be fair, it was short notice too, though, right?
It was short notice, you're right. And Overeem's no joke. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's one hell of a talented heavyweight. And Overeem set the tone with a couple of those takedowns by saying, hey, look, those leg kicks, the takedowns plus my hands, you're in for a world of hurt, buddy. Which one are you going to get first? He kind of started making Rozenstruik think a little bit too much while he was out there. Whereas Rozenstruik, when he's out there and he's just competing and he's throwing caution to the wind, he's a fucking tornado, you know what I mean? Sweeping through town. And right now he made him actually think, and I think he just started getting clogged. You could tell he was like mentally clogged. What do I do? What do I do? And that clock just started, you know, chipping away little by little. It almost reminded me of Lewis and Ngannou about a year and a half ago, where they just couldn't get going. They didn't want to throw anything, you know what I mean? And Rozenstruik wasn't like to that level, but he just wasn't the Jairzinho we've come to know. But again, he did wind up throwing some punches. Now, around the fifth round goes, the commentators noted, and you can see it, Overeem became strike force. Overeem, remember when he used to breathe really hard, you can tell he was gassed. I mean, he was really, really gasping for air. And I think that's when Rozenstruik smelled a little bit of blood, like, okay, this guy is probably a little bit foggy. I can sneak these hammers through, you know what I mean? Boom, boom, here we go. And he landed it. Now, let me ask you something. When he hit Overeem, that punch split his lip, also made his eyes kind of like roll back a little bit. He fell into the cage, and Rozenstruik walked off. However, Overeem came to pretty quickly. In fact, if Rozenstruik had come at him, Overeem may have had a chance, all right, to grab a single, which is what fighters usually do, while the other guys then start kind of throwing the hammer fist or whatever. And there's a chance that all that could have taken place in 4 seconds. The bell would have sounded, and that would have been it. Instead, Overeem did get up, which is a good sign. However, when he stood up, he kind of just floated away, like into La La Land, and I don't know if he thought the fight was over or he was in La La Land or what he thought, but as he did it, and as Mergliata's basically keeping space between them, letting the world know, and Jairzinho, this fight ain't over, he then looks at Overeem and realizes, oh, no, this guy's done. Now, in those 4 seconds, Jairzinho probably could have ran, which I don't see him doing this. He's not Anthony Pettis, but maybe ran and threw a flying knee or more punches or a kick. Who knows? Because it looked like Overeem would not have been ready for him. Maybe out of his periphery would have thrown his hand up as a last-minute, you know, protector or something. But I don't think too many people have a problem with Mergliata's call there. But I want to get your thoughts.
The follow-up shot isn't always 100% either, right? Most of the time, they don't actually land it all that well. And that could have been enough for Overeem to grab a hold of him. And if he grabbed a hold of him, anytime you make any type of motion like that, I say it buys you at least 2 more seconds in a fight, right? And so at that point, he would have cruised to what we all, you know, and the judges would have said would have been an Overeem victory.
Yeah.
So I think in a way, just Rozenstruik, out of all the walk-offs I've ever seen in my life, that was the most arrogant one. Because he completely turned his back and just walked away.
Right.
And Mergliata stood there long enough where, hell, I had even thought, like, okay, Overeem's up. Like, if he kind of knows what's going on, he even had enough time to turn around and, like, kick his head off or something. Like, it could have been really, really nasty. It was – I don't think we all argue the final decision. I think we argue just the way it went down isn't the way it's supposed to go.
It was as simple as this. If Overeem had just stood up and kind of stared at Rozenstruik, I think Mergliata lets the fight continue. It's the way he kind of walked off, almost like, like I'm walking in the park. Like, where am I again? You know,
I didn't see the glazed eyes. Did you?
On the way down, yeah. On the way down.
Live? I didn't see it live. I didn't see it until the replays.
It looked pretty vicious. Okay. No, you're right.
So I don't know that Mergliata saw the eyes.
Well, he's got a great seat, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then the split lip. Like, when you add it all together, yeah.
You know,
but at the moment, he was concerned. Did he see all that?
He was concerned. Well, apparently he didn't, or maybe again, what's-his-face getting up quickly, Overeem getting up so quickly convinced them, hey, this fight isn't over. You know what I mean? Because when you fall and then you're in the crucifix position, like your arms don't even come to cover up or you're not reaching for a single or anything like that, that's usually when they go, okay, that's it. You're right. Rozenstruik took a chance there because by walking off, if Overeem had just gotten up, and kind of threw his hands in the air like, hey, I'm still here or something like that. That fight would have ended with Overeem winning. Even if let's just say you want to be generous and give Rozenstruik the 10-8. It's not boxing. And he hadn't built up enough equity in the round on top of those 2 shots to call it a 10-8. But let's just say you gave him that. Overeem still wins the fight, you know, because he had accumulated 40 points. he would have wound up with 48, and Rozenstruik would have wound up with 46. But that little, I think him walking off proved to Dan, like, oh, no, this guy really is done.
Mm. Yeah, I think if you were to take all of the referees, let's just say you took 10 referees, I don't know that they would all end up in the same situation in that fight. Which, like, I think it'd be split down the middle probably.
Is that the beauty of MMA? Is that everything is just... it's all subjective and everybody interprets it differently. And
I mean, it can be, it just depends who you are, like who you're rooting for, who your money's on.
Cause think about it. We teased, okay, it was a big weekend of football. By that, folks, we mean soccer, football and American football. But think about like Saturday's
Patriots
game
today. Did you see what happened to them?
I didn't see that. I saw they lost.
Well, they had a clear touchdown that even when you review it, you go, oh, that's a touchdown. And it didn't get called in their favor. So even in the NFL, they get it wrong, you know, and that's with instant replay.
Well, and then
all that.
Think of soccer with the VAR. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's holding up the game, and we all want the definitive answers. But hell, there's times when the referee that's like a 20-year referee that's in the booth for like Fox or CBS, he's saying this is what I would do, and he's disagreeing with New York or wherever, whatever city is the host of where replay's taking place. You know what I mean? So the two commentators will be on separate sides. You know what I mean? It's crazy, man. But something about the subjectivity is I like it. What sucks is it comes at the cost in our sport of that win bonus and all the momentum one gets from being the winner. You know, mm-hmm. like you basically can't climb the ladder. And if you lose, you fall down, you know, a couple steps. And now you got to work your way back up. But what does that mean? That could be a difference of a year and a half or 2 years.
Hey, look, I'm still yet to hear from Overeem's camp that said we got ripped off, right? Like
Overeem
haven't
said
really
something.
Heard too much about that.
Overeem said something really subtle. Just I think it was stopped a little bit early, but congrats.
But I think they all kind of say that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think if he would have like thrown his hands up, like what do you think? Like maybe.
Oh yeah, he didn't put it. He didn't throw.
He didn't
a
really
fit.
Do that.
Yeah, you're right. He did not throw a fit, and that was that. And, you know, we're all going to move on from it. I mean, look, it's just us talking about it because that's how we watched it, and I get emotional. There was a lot of parlays that were coming to a halt, and Goz is at the finals. You know,
I had the world's worst parlay ever.
Goz is in Goz is dabbling in parlaying, and then Goz is also in the staff picks. You know, that's going down to the wire, too, so I think Goz was keeping an eye there, and that was probably tripping you out. Now, Rozenstruik, during the week, we noted, hey, good on you to kind of throw out Ngannou's name. And then he threw it out again. Mm-hmm. And then Ngannou told him, hey, I heard you, you know.
It's so subtle.
Yeah, and he called him Babagya. And it took me like about 10 minutes to figure out what the hell it is, what the hell that means. But basically means boogeyman. So Ngannou has already addressed this. And says he's down to fight him, you know. Now, when this might happen, I don't know. Because I think Ngannou knows, well, I ain't getting Stipe because him and Cormier are going to mix it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to fight someone. Now, question is, does Rozenstruik want to fight this soon? I don't know. We'll find out.
Well, if you're Ngannou, I mean, aren't you a little kind of salivating at this point? Because that performance, I think you look at that and you go, I got that guy.
Yes. I would say right now Ngannou looks further along than Rozenstruik just because of the level of competition. And if you just want to, like, use common opponents, there's one right there. You saw what Ngannou did to Overeem.
Yeah.
So as long as Ngannou doesn't gas like he did against Stipe or have a mental block like he did. Sorry, folks, we're at the Mandalay Bay here. It's kind of a noisy Sunday night. As long as he doesn't have a mental block like he did against Lewis or anything like that, I think he'll be fine. He's really turned a corner, and he's a beast. I can comfortably say I think we'll cover Ngannou as a former champion at some point. All right, next up, Marina Rodriguez versus Cynthia Calvillo. It was a draw, Goz. The taste of a draw is horrific, man. I never like it. But yet we got two of them, but let's talk about this one first.
I mean, don't you kind of get it in this one, though? It's not one of those. I thought it made sense. I thought it really was a 10-8. I think at the end, Rodriguez had she poured it on just a little bit more, maybe she could have danced at a 10-8 land.
Rodriguez, when she got up?
Yeah, which would have won her the fight. But in this one, okay. It's kind of funny because if you look at their two skill sets, like, you can see where the other one, they exploited each other. And you could see where they both need to shore some things up.
Was
right?
Calvillo under the chin, though? And were we at the point where they were saying, it's tight? You know, like, is she going to get out of this? Like, I don't know that we got to that. Mm-hmm. And I like to look at a 10-8 when someone gets dropped. And then there's that follow-up, and you see the referee come in and say, I'm going to stop it. Give me something. You know what I mean? Or in a
She's
submission.
Done a lot of elbow,
when somebody's like basically in the actual submission. I mean, she was. But you know what? What do we call it? They call it the 3 Ds. Dominance, duration.
Damage.
You know, so I guess you could give her duration and damage. Shit, and dominance. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, because she took her down early.
Yeah.
And then from there, like, it's just Rodriguez just didn't do anything was the problem.
So basically, it was pretty consistent. The judges went 10-9, 10-9 Rodriguez all across the board. And then on the other side, two of them said 10-8 Calvillo, and only one of them said 10-9. So, yeah, that sounds about right, I guess.
It's one of those you kind of get the other one, not so much.
Right. Rodriguez is a little bit disappointed in that. She says, hey, look, I don't want to run it back. I don't want to fight a flyweight. And that's her little subtle jab at Calvillo, who missed by 4.5 pounds. She did get some of her money. But she said, hey, man, on the ground, I felt like I was grappling with a flyweight. Look, two things. You're a big girl. You took her money, and you had the decision to do it or not, and you did. I guess you were entitled to say those things, and that's the time to do it after the fight. Hopefully, we don't spend the next 6 months hearing her say this.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The flip side is She's right. She's 100% right. Hey, I made weight. She didn't make weight. So I maybe can bitch about this a little bit. But I also see her side, because if you say no to the UFC, A, you may be in their doghouse. B, you don't
That's
get paid.
The thing.
I mean, I guess you might get paid your show money. So you're kind of just in a bad spot. You know what I mean?
Every one of those fighters that does that, not every single one of them does it because you go, wow, that's a brave person or a ballsy guy to do something like that. A lot of them do it because they just don't want to feel the wrath. You know, they don't want to, they want to be able to ask for matchups and hear back from the matchmaker. They don't want to sit there waiting for phone calls or have to go to, you know, God knows where for fights when they're used to fighting in the States. So I kind of get her from that standpoint, but you're right. At the end of the day, you said okay and you showed up.
Right. I think, though, that even though it's a draw and neither lady gets their win bonus, I think that Rodriguez and Stamen, who we'll talk about in a second, can both field calls from the matchmaker as if they won. Even though they were a draw, one of them had the higher stock.
Too.
Don't you think Rodriguez has the higher stock?
In the fight, yeah. Because she made weight.
She won those two rounds, and yeah, I did get dominated, but I got up from it. You know, she didn't finish me, and she did. You know, that's where her advantage showed, was on the ground. She carefully explained that, so she might have a little bit higher stock than Calvillo at this point, especially because Calvillo's missed before. But that was your co-main event, folks, at the UFC Washington card. In the featured bout, Ben Rothwell beat Stefan Struve. Stefan Struve had won a fight earlier this year, and then kind of gave a, like, 75% retirement. Sounded like he was done. I think most of us called it a retirement. The next thing you know, he signed a 6-fight contract. He's back in. What happens? First round, takes a vicious cup shot. Look, I think they're all pretty vicious. He was flopping back and forth like a fish. And, you know, I think the judges, or excuse me, the commentators weren't helping any. You know, all of a sudden, they were like urologists. They were experts on nut shots. Like, oh, that's the one. That's the one. He ain't coming back from that. Man, I've seen nut shots before.
I think
where
it's
someone,
the way he was rolling around.
I think so. But I've seen guys do that before and come back, like Stefan did. Mm-hmm. And I've also seen people just kind of wince, stop, and not do the whole theatrics, but also not come back. You know what I mean? So I don't know that that's the ultimate read. Regardless, they're giving their opinion. That's fine. They're getting paid to do it. And it's three respectable people in Anikfelder and Cormier. However, you do get 5 minutes, and you want to see them come off of that. Look, I'll give you an example. Today, I was watching football, and I always have trouble pronouncing his name, our fullback for the 49ers, Justacek or something like that. he took a vicious hit to the head, and he kind of was flopping. And we were like, oh, no, concussion. He's out of the game. Dude, he was in like two plays later, and we did get a penalty. And it was like that targeting rule. You know what I mean? So, you know, you let the 5 minutes play out, see what happens, blah, blah, blah. Okay, we get to the second round. Everyone forgets Rothwell took a shot to the nuts. Now, his obviously didn't land as much. He was sarcastic and says, oh, what do we do about this one? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But he was able to fight through it. In fact, there really wasn't much of a timeout. And then after that, I don't know if it was seconds or minutes later, Rothwell hits Stroop again.
I think it's the fact that it was the same kick.
Yeah.
You know, inside. Like, I think if it's
not
something that bad.
Not intentional, though, ruled by Mergliano. Because when he threw it, Stefan was moving away. But what Rothwell shouldn't have done was throw the second one because he's kind of like in a probation of sorts.
Yeah, like if you're going to throw it, throw him to the outside then.
Right.
But if you're going to throw it like that to the inside, like you're just playing with fire at that point.
Right.
And it looked almost exactly the same as the first one. So his reaction was, I personally wouldn't have that reaction.
Yeah, he didn't
sell I think you're just basically going, I'm guilty.
I'm the dumbest guy ever. Yeah.
But I understand where his frustration was coming from.
Right. Yeah, that was one where neither foul was ruled intentional because I think Dan noticed that Stefan was moving away. I think if Stefan had been standing still and Ben caught him, I think after the second one, he just would have disqualified him. Mm-hmm. You know, because he gave him a stern warning the first time, but no point deduction. He didn't give Struve a point deduction for Rothwell's because it all happened so quick. And then here comes the controversy. As Struve is down, as he's getting his 5 minutes, Mergliotta approaches him and kind of advises him how a corner would, if a corner would be allowed to. But not even a corner is allowed to say anything to you because if you've noticed, they'll send these fighters to neutral corners, give the 5 minutes, settle down everything that's happening at that particular time, and then obviously if a doctor is needed to come in to consult, then that happens. But Mergliotta approached him and basically said, like I said, what a corner would say, like, hey, look, this is the situation. You know, we think you won the first round. You and I thought he won the first round. We think you're winning the second round. But the second round has not finished. And so if he doesn't disqualify him, this will be a no contest. This is the corner talking, if they were to talk. But if you can get through this second round, but not come out for the third, for example, or you get kicked in the third or something. That's when they would go to the judges' scorecards, I believe, and that would be it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So he's given all this advice, and he says, I even think you won two rounds. I just don't
this
get it.
This is odd.
Yeah, I don't get why Mergliotta's only job is to say, you got 5 minutes. Are you all right? Do I need to bring the doctor in or whatever? You don't say how you're going to call those fouls or anything because – you don't want any of those fighters to play that game. You know, if that was the third round, that would have been that would have unfolded a lot differently because Struve, let's just say he had won those first two rounds and happened in a couple seconds into the third, he gets all that data, he may just go, ah, you're right, I can't continue. Let's go to the judges' scorecards. And they would present a favorable card to Struve because even
he's
if he lost.
Say anything after those two kicks.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, it was just out of line by Mergliotta. And here's what the puzzling thing is I know Dan the Tan gets some heat over, like, you know, he had the thing with Michael Venom Page recently or whatever. And it goes in cycles with these guys. But I really think he's an outstanding ref, Goes. I just don't understand why he did that. Like, that was just a major, major brain fart for him to relay that information. Like, that's so, like, unethical, it feels like. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going to happen with Dan the Tan. I'd love to hear how he responds. You know, like, I love Ben Rothwell post-fight. He apologized. He gave respect to his opponent. You know what I mean? But the opponent agreed to go. Ben knew the urgency. Ben went for the finish, and he got it. But I really liked the first thing he did to clear things up, you know, with the crowd and with his opponent.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, you don't really hear in press conferences from these guys. They go into a room with the commission and they talk it over. They go over those type of things. And I'm sure a lot of these guys I hear still reach out to guys like Herb Dean and Big John McCarthy.
Right.
Hopefully they get advised properly. I just feel like it's something that you probably would never do again. So I just kind of give them a pass a little bit
right.
in this situation. but it was just kind of an odd night, really.
Exactly, and that's exactly what I did. I reached out to a rules guru who told me, yep, should not have done that. But it happened, and Rothwell won, so that's that. Now, Struve, I wonder what will happen with him. You know, hopefully he's okay in that region. And if he continues to want, if he wants to continue to fight, he showed me some stuff, because I did. Still want to see a lot more from Struve, but that's something I've always wanted to see, was him use a 7-foot frame. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, he looked like that looked like it could have been a winnable fight, and Ben Rothwell's a respected heavyweight, so let's see what happens with him.
If you're ever ready to call it quits, and something like this happens, these are those type of fights that I think just really drain everything out of you. Because you sit there and you think, what am I doing? I'm preparing for a fight. I go in there, I get kicked in the nuts twice. This is the most horrible job on the planet. So, I mean, if he already had kind of 1 foot out the door, I don't know that this is something that would help him. I wish maybe you'd hear a comment like what you just said, that he actually didn't look too bad. Like, he looked pretty good. But it's just, you know, tell that to him the night of.
Yeah, exactly. All right, moving on the card. Aspen Ladd defeated Yana Kuniskaya. Cody Stamann defeated Song Yadong. Rob Font defeated Ricky Simone. I mean, I really, really enjoyed that main card. Mm-hmm. Tim Means, even, against Thiago Alves, was very, very fun to watch. Billy Quarantillo defeated Jacob Kilburn. Bryce Mitchell with the submission possibly of the year versus Matt Sales, the
Twister.
The Twister that's only been done one other time in the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Joe Selecki defeated Matt Wyman. Verna Jandaroba defeated Mallory Martin. And Mahmoud Muradov from TMT defeated Trevor Smith. I think that mouthpiece is still being looked for on the streets of Washington, D.C.
And a side note, I thought it was kind of touching, everything that they were doing with the whole cancer and all that.
The cancer awareness, yeah. The UFC's participation in donating.
Stuart Scott, every now and again, sometimes your life moves so quickly that you just forget that there's people that go through these type of things and just how long their bout is, you know, with dealing with it. And I'm so shocked that, like, guys like Paul Felder and Daniel Cormier could actually sit there. That's a hard thing to talk about in private, let alone have to talk about it in front of everyone.
Yeah,
but they held it together, and
they lost fathers in DC more recent goes. And how about Tony Martin sitting next to his mom?
I know, man. It's like, to be able to do that, because I think saying those type of things for people, it really strikes home. And maybe that's just like that one little motivating factor that gets you to go to the doctor or do whatever, you know. Like, I'm sure they probably save lives in bringing those type of things up. So that was interesting. It was different.
Yeah, I completely agree. All right, you know, the results are all over MMA Junkie. There's a lot of post fight coverage there on MMA Junkie, but let's just do one more story here from the card, and then we'll touch on a little bit of news before we bounce. Cody Stamann also got a draw, and I think this is the one you were alluding to, like, hey, it doesn't add up to me.
No.
He had the takedowns. He outstruck him by over two to one, I think 2.5 to 1, yet he got stuck with a majority draw. And here's how his broke down, according to MMA Decisions. Shout out to those guys. 2 28-28 and a 29-27 in his favor. The way they judged it was, in round one, he had, remember the grounded opponent?
Mm-hmm.
He took a point away because it was blatant. And so Stamann, Yadong was already penalized a point. Stamann, on one judge's scorecard, won the round. That's why he won 10-8, even though it was a normal 10-9 round. However, two judges said, nah, Yadong won the fight. That's why his 9 stays, and Stamann gets a 9.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the key right there.
It was kind of a close round, but I thought Stamann won that round.
So did I.
Yeah.
Then, in round two, Yadong won that round. But I think even Stamann admits, yeah. I think we all agree that Yadong won that round. And then the last one, Stamann won the round. I don't think anyone has a problem. So basically, we circle back to round one. Mm-hmm. The round we thought that Stamann won, but he didn't. And so that's why he got – that's why the draw was awarded. But, man, MMA Decisions, if you look – I see 10 scores for Stamann from notable journalists, 4 for the draw, Obviously, nothing, no one for Yadong. And just like the stats don't really support it, you know?
That doesn't. It. I really couldn't believe that. I mean, it was just one of those where you look at it and like, if you look at the stats, if you watch the fight, if you see the control, the takedowns, it was all Cody's fight to me. I can't believe that he ended up with a draw coming out of there.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was UFC Washington. Let's finish up with some news. Big shout out to Mike Bond. He was on location in Washington, D.C., and he got some really, really key interviews. We'll have time to dive into one of them. I know tomorrow on the Spinning Back Click, we'll talk a little bit about what happened with Liz Carmouche. But how about him catching up with Justin Gaethje? That was also very, very nice score for young Mike Bond. Gaethje basically says, I'm not the odd man out. I'm the next guy in line. Now, why he's saying that is because Mike Bond asked him, hey, you didn't get the Conor McGregor fight. Cerrone did, a guy you just beat. And you're not in the title fight because Khabib and Tony have come to terms. They got a date set, and they're going to be fighting. So what about you? And what Gaethje's saying is, well, that's fine. I'm fighting the winner of Khabib and Tony. I'm not worried about the other guys. And he also goes on to explain, because when I beat either Khabib or Tony, I'll hold the belt. And at that point, if Conor still wants them, it'll be even more lucrative. Why? Because he gets those pay-per-view points. He's looking at this as a business guy. Look, all fine points made by Justin Gaethje, but in my opinion, goes, he's still playing with fire a little bit.
What if it's a draw?
That fight is till April. You're right. It happened with Thompson and Woodley. What if it's a barn burner? It happened with Dillashaw and well, that wasn't even a barn burner. I was going to say with Cody, and they ran that one back. So there's been fights that they ran back that weren't barn burners, and there have been fights that have been barn burners, and they run it back because of that. So, yeah, so many things can happen here. You know what I mean? Plus, remember, Khabib, once he fights, he's going to observe Ramadan, which comes a little bit earlier this year. It'll be done in May. The soonest, in my opinion, he would fight is like April or September, and that would be one whole year that Justin Gaethje will have not fought. Now, maybe he wants that. I don't know. Maybe
I was going to say, it might be a good thing for him, too.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. But again, you still don't know, because even in the best case scenario for Justin Gaethje, the best case scenario could be, look, it could actually be Tony wins. Now he doesn't have to worry about Ramadan. All right? Conor loses. Now he doesn't have to worry about Conor intercepting his title shot. And then they're all set to fight sometime in July or August. But guess what? Conor still has this incredible power where somehow he could probably talk Dana White.
Even with a loss?
I think so.
I don't want to be in a sport that would do that.
I know that.
Even off a loss?
Dude, the stuff that happens in this sport is mind-boggling. I know that's the worst possible reach.
I mean, he could get hurt in training for one of the fights. Like, there's so many things that can happen.
I know
happen.
It's the worst possible reach ever. But Yoel Romero, if I'm not mistaken, has lost two in a row. He might get a title shot. Yeah. Why? Because he's just scary and exciting. And we'll all watch the fight because him versus Adesanya would be interesting. Well, guess what? So would Conor versus Ferguson or Khabib part two. That's what I'm saying. And Conor's more of a wild card than Yoel Romero. So, man, I don't know. And I don't know if Gaethje should do like Ngannou and just say, give me somebody, but give me on the same card as the champ, which is what I always say. That way I'm insurance for that fight card. But I also stay on the same timeline. Now, Gaethje will say, tell me the opponent. I need 3 months to prepare. I don't know if he means I need 3 months to amp myself mentally and prepare my tactics for that special opponent, or if I just need to get my body in shape for 3 months. Because I don't know. You know, like, let's say you gave him Barbosa or someone, and then the week of, Khabib or Tony falls out and he has to step in. Does he go, no, I need 3 months specifically for a guy, or I've already had my 3 months. I'm in shape. Sure, give me either one.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough situation because, like, who do you give him at that point? And I guess when you think about, like, who his manager is, you know, Ali Abdelaziz, he seems to get his guys what they want. They all seem very happy. So I'm sure at some point they sat down and they just came out with, this is probably the better play, right? But a guy like Justin Gaethje is so exciting. Like you said, Yoel Romero, that's the reason he's even in this talk, is because he's big, scary, puts on good fights. That's Justin Gaethje. Everybody wants to see him fight. Yeah. So it's just kind of weird that he's out of this equation when really, of those four guys, he's the guy that I'd most want to see fight anytime.
Probably. Yeah, I agree. All right. In boxing, Andy Ruiz held three of the four major belts. There's four major belts in boxing, WBA, WBC, IBF, and WBO. Andy Ruiz holds three of them. No longer, because he lost in Ruiz versus Joshua II. And God goes, it was kind of a boring fight. Ruiz just had no answers. He came in overweight. Joshua came in better weight, better shape, I should say. And he got his belt back. And how, you know, that's just sad, man. It's sad that somebody that worked all their life to become a champ, got all these riches and everything, and then couldn't put those riches aside for 2 to 3 months to get in proper shape and then go in there. And guess what? If that guy can still beat you, hey, hats off. But if not, you can't look in the mirror and go, man, I'm a fucking idiot. Like, I didn't train. And that's almost what it looked like with Andy Ruiz. He just didn't train much. You know, you see all those vlogs and things he was doing, purchasing homes, purchasing cars, just acting a fool. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Man, he blew it, in my opinion. Because if he beats this guy, he's in the rearview mirror. And now Wilder, Fury, you know, other fights are still out there for him. And he controls so much because of those belts that he has. He really could have been a major star, man.
I think they both dropped the ball. I think Ruiz dropped the ball for everything you just said. I think Joshua dropped the ball because Ruiz dropped the ball. How do you... He fought the safest of game plans.
It was boring.
It's not anything that anybody's ever going to be mouthwatering for to see you fight again.
Right.
He took zero chances.
Fury Wilder 2 is mouthwatering, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you, man. But, you know, that's what went down in boxing. And then over at Combate America, shout out to those guys. We actually called the first Combate card. So they're cool people, man. It's unfortunate we didn't continue on with them. But they had their biggest card ever, Tito Ortiz. And Alberto Del Rio headlined a pay-per-view. It kind of went as you would suspect. Alberto Del Rio actually had a little bit of athleticism there when he kind of locked up body to body. And
threw him.
Yeah, he did. But that cost him because after that, Tito was basically in control, and Alberto, it cost him his WWE belt. I think mm-hmm. that's true, you know, and a little bit of pride. And then, of course, both of them got political there at the end.
That was strange.
But whatever, you know, it's kind of how I expected a 50-year-old and a 45-year-old to compete.
Yeah, I mean, man, you want to at least see some strikes getting thrown.
Yeah.
It was more like WWE than it was in the main, really. I mean, they locked up. There wasn't much to it. I called Tito by submission. I thought that's the way it would go, but it's just, I mean, what? That's fine and dandy, but now what do you do with Tito? Like, who do you give him next?
He says he's got one more fight. He wants to lead the charge. I wish Tito would just go.
I'm happy for him.
I found a company that'll pay me a lot of money because I'm Tito Ortiz, and I would like to do this again, but he's not. He's got to play the game, thank the troops, wear the Trump stuff.
He did hold that choke on.
And then how about the laziest gravedigger celebration ever? He just dug one time. I think he forgot what he was doing.
Mm-hmm. And then what does he do? He slides over. I don't know what the hell he does.
Slides the body. And
how about the choke he held on for kind of a while?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit.
I don't know. I've never really liked that too much.
It was Paul Harris-esque, but he did do it and then kind of like pushed him off, like, get off me. You know?
Yeah.
I guess they said it got real personal. Who knows?
But everything gets personal with Tito Ortiz.
Yeah, he's still mad at
Junkie. Personal on us.
I know. Yeah. All right. All right, folks. That's our Sunday edition for an early Monday release. Some of you will get this pretty soon, actually, and so that benefits you all. And that's why we come in here to do it, so you guys don't have to – you don't have any choices to make on Monday. It's basically sitting there waiting for you at your doorstep. So thank you again for all of your support. And don't forget to check out our video franchises of The Spinning Backlick, Off Guard, and The Rankings Report. And there's still more to come. So you can kind of put our mugs, I guess, to our voices. We haven't done much video in the past, but we're doing a lot more. So check it out. And follow us on Twitter and Instagram at MMA Junkie George for me, at The Goes for Goes, at MMA Junkie Radio for the radio show. And we are out of here. Go out there and be a champion.